Welcome to the Top 5 Podcast with your hosts, Rail Bricker and Lindsay Adams.
And welcome back. Our special guest today is Greg DeVore. Greg lives in McLean, Virginia, and he is the co-founder of a company called ScreenSteps, which he formed with his brother some years ago. ScreenSteps is a company dedicated to helping businesses transfer knowledge to their employees faster. They do this through a combination of a software platform and a framework that guides organizations in reducing their reliance on tribal knowledge. This has resulted in onboarding programs that cut new hire times to proficiency from 12 months to less than 30 days. This is good. Greg's a co-author of a book, Find and Follow, Reduce Supervisor Burnout and Improve Employee Performance by Transferring Knowledge Faster. He holds a degree in composition and film scoring from the Berklee College of Music. And as I mentioned before, he lives in McLean, Virginia with his wife and four boys. Lucky you, Greg. And that explains why apparently there's a lot of broken items in his house.
Lots of broken things, yes.
Yeah, I love it. So welcome.
Wrestlers, rugby players, that sort of stuff.
That's it. Great to have you with us. And today we're going to talk about the top five tips for training new employees without pulling your hair out. Now, I got to warn you, ladies and gentlemen, you can't see us, but you guys probably know what I look like. I've got a 5-inch part, you know, not much hair on top of my head. Greg looks better than I do. He's got a 6-inch part. So we are skull brothers in some ways. So Greg, welcome. Top five tips. Let's get going. Tip number one.
Tip number one is to understand what your employees, what questions they need to answer, what they need to do, and what problems they need to solve. The big problem that people have when they're training employees, when they sit down and think, hey, I'm going to train this new hire, they start thinking about what's all the stuff that they need to know. But they never start with what do they need to be able to do? What questions do they answer? What problems do they need to solve? You need to start with the end in mind, and then you work backwards from that. When you start with what they need to know, you end up, it's too ambiguous. And so you do a bunch of training, and the employees end up not being able to work on their own. They have to keep coming back to you. But if you start with that end in mind, and this is a workshop that we take people through, and you have that analysis, now it becomes crystal clear what you need to train your employee on.
I mean, I'm going to assume that obviously you've brought them in at a certain level of, let's call it technical competence in a general sense, right? That, you know, you didn't grab them off the street as they walked past the building, that you had some level of recruitment and job fit at that point. So what I guess is the, you know, what is it that they really need to do and solve, and how do they do that, I guess, in the context of the corporate culture? Is that what you're trying to create?
Yeah. So what we do is when we take people through the workshop, a lot of times when they're hiring, they haven't really crystallized exactly what this employee is going to do. And that makes it really hard to build the training program. So in the workshop, we say, okay, let's take two scenarios. One is I'm bringing someone in to replace a role that we already have in the organization. And the other is I'm creating a net new role, right? We're expanding and I'm creating a new role. If we go through and we say, okay, what are they going to have to do on a daily, weekly, quarterly, monthly basis? You know, what are those exact things? What are going to be the triggers that are going to cause them to have to do something? When we get that level of clarity, it's very helpful for the employee because now they know exactly what they're responsible for. But when we're building that training program, now we can be crystal clear about what we're training them to do instead of them having them just kind of wander around watching other people and trying to figure out where they fit in.
So it's kind of like the old phrase, be specific to be terrific. The more focused you can be, the more effective you're going to be.
Yep. And start with what is the outcome you want and work backwards from that. Don't just dump a bunch of knowledge on them and help them and hope that they'll figure it out. There's certain things in your business that are going to be very specific. So start with that. Really be specific about what you want them to be able to accomplish.
I guess you in your bio, you talk about this, the business you have that is a combination of software and onboarding and stuff like that. I mean, so a lot of the corporate knowledge, you know, how do you fill out a leave form? How do you apply for a bathroom break? or anything along those lines, you know, are corporations heading more and more to the sort of employee portal for that sort of knowledge? And that's not stuff that's done in inductions.
Well, it can be done in inductions, but they're moving to that portal because a lot of organizations are now either hybrid or remote. And so it's not as easy as just kind of raising your hand or watching what, you know, Tom does and how he fills out a procedure or whatever it is. People need to be able to be empowered to work independently as our businesses are evolving and still kind of adapting to what, you know, the pandemic put in. So they need to have that independence. We can't learn in the same way that we used to learn just by osmosis and just observing other people. That's not an easy thing to do over Zoom. So more and more businesses are moving towards that, but they're still struggling to get out of that old paradigm of, hey, we just ask Karen or Tom or whoever when we don't know what to do.
Cool. So let's move on then, Greg. Tip number two for training new employees without pulling your hair out.
The next tip is to separate actionable knowledge from foundational knowledge. So actionable knowledge is how I do something. Foundational knowledge is all the background information I need if I'm going to follow some instructions. So for example, a lot of times when people write a training guide or documentation, they're mixing in all this information about here's all the background on this procedure. Here's the 10 stories of why it's changed over the past 5 years. And then here's how you do it. And here's all the if-thens and all that. That's too much information for somebody to process or memorize when they're being trained. But also, it's too much information for them to then have to reread if they ever have to use that documentation or guide again. So if you separate those two out of what's the background knowledge that you need to understand our business, then here's what's the actual knowledge. And we say, we're going to teach you foundational knowledge. We're going to not teach you actual knowledge. We're going to teach you to rely on digital guides or checklists or documentation for that.
Okay. So you're trying to get them to be able to let's use the CX, customer experience or customer interaction. You know, you want them to be functional very quickly and almost empowered to make decisions without knowing what went on 3 years ago in the business.
Exactly. And without having to memorize every little piece of software you're using, every little step in every procedure, that information is not worth memorizing. So that's actionable knowledge. We want to use like a GPS for that. But the foundational knowledge of what tools do we use? What types of customers do we interact with? What's the product that we're selling? What's the problem we're solving for the customer? All those things, that the employee needs to know that so that when they get that actionable knowledge, they can follow that guide without feeling totally lost.
I mean, you know, in my businesses, in my financial services group, the biggest thing I ever taught staff was to say, I don't know, but I know where to find the answer.
And exactly.
And to be confident enough to say that to a customer and in fact, I tell them not to say, I don't know, but to say, I think I know the answer, but give me 20 minutes to go and check up for you and I will come back to you, or give me 3 hours or 2 days. Doesn't matter on the timeline. Yeah. But it allows them to say, I know where to get the knowledge, and then I will be 100% sure giving you the right answer.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And we even train them on an additional thing to say is, I want to make sure that I get this right for you. So let me go look this up, because I want to make sure I get this exactly right. And a lot of businesses think, oh, it'll be so much better if our employees just memorize everything. And there's like some shame in saying I have to use a resource, but it's all we do is set people up for failure. I mean, we know when we work from memory, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to forget things. We're not going to be consistent. So if we can instill that confidence in the employees that, hey, for anything actionable in our business, I'm going to be able to find that and follow it.
Fantastic. So, Greg, hit us up. Tip number three for the top five tips for training new employees without pulling your hair out.
So now that you've got everything separated out into foundational and actionable knowledge, Now you want to go build checklists, how-to guides, and decision trees for all the actual knowledge. Really, any task that someone's going to need to perform, any decision they have to make, any problem they need to solve, there should be a checklist for that. There should be a work instruction for that, or a decision tree in there. And they need to be designed not just so that it's the first time they use it, but every single time it comes up, they can follow that. You know, people say, once again, like, oh, well, it's going to be better if people just know how to do that. Look at an airplane. Like, the pre-flight checklist is not there because the pilot doesn't know how to fly the plane. The pre-flight checklist is there to help them do their job confidently and consistently. So why wouldn't we use that everywhere else in our lives when we're dealing with whether it's finance, healthcare, whatever it is? Those checklists or those decision trees can give us so much more confidence and consistency in what we're doing. So we want to design those for every single bit of actionable information.
It's interesting that I used to fly small planes, and one of the planes of the group that I used to fly, I loved flying that plane because they had a little, almost Rolodex, mounted in the cockpit, and you literally turned a little lever, and it, and I've seen that actually in 747s as well. You literally turn a little lever and it goes step by step on the little screen showing you what the next step on the checklist is. And I was motivated. In the days before 9/11, I used to show the cabin crew my pilot's license and often get invited into the cockpit. And you can't, since 9/11, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I found then was it motivated me to do things where my brain, my ADHD brain says, I'll just skip those steps. But watching these guys in the cockpit of a 737 or an Airbus using this little Rolodex and going line for line through their checklist and actually repeating it to each other, the pilot or the co-pilot, whoever was in charge, was a very interesting process.
Well, I'm curious, these checklists, what if a checklist doesn't exist and an employee sees an opportunity? Is it organic? Does the employee then just make up a checklist and submit it? Or how does that part of the process work? What's your thinking there?
Exactly. You want to do that. You want to capture it right when you need it. So if the checklist doesn't exist, you know, the software that we sell makes it very easy to create these types of guides, checklists, and decision trees. But you should empower the employee to capture it right there so that you know what they're doing, what they understand. And then that can be refined later on and improved. But we really train that as soon as you've done a process, right after that, if the checklist didn't exist, write it down, because you're going to have to do it again and you want to capture that.
How big are these checklists? And I know that's a weird concept, but particularly the sort of decision trees. And I in the finance game, I was struck. I went to a bank for a visit, a site visit a few years ago to their mortgage processing team, and their decision tree was 8 foot high and 5 feet wide. I stuck across a whole wall, and I stood staring at that, and I went, that's far too complicated. They've actually tried to build in every possible answer there without saying, get to this point and go to checklist number two.
Yep. Yeah, so we really break it down as to part of to roles and trigger points. So a lot of times the business will build a decision tree that is for the entire process that touches all the different departments that are going to handle this process. And that's helpful from a planning standpoint, but that doesn't really help an employee. The employee needs to know, when this input comes to me, what do I have to do with it then to push it on to the next part of the process, make cross departments. And so we want to build that decision tree, not for the entire process, but we want to build it for, in my role, when this comes to me, what do I do? And then how do I complete it? It's like an API, like what's the input? What's my output? And then we can link out to other things. Like you said, we might have a sub checklist or a different reference guide that we can link out to and piece these things together. But if you try to put everything for the whole business into one giant thing, it just becomes a bunch of spaghetti and it's too messy.
Okay, well, let's move forward now. Tip number four, what have you got for us, Greg?
So number four is, now that we've got these checklists built and how-to guides, decision trees, we've separated out foundational and actionable knowledge. We want to teach them the foundational knowledge, and we want to have them practice following the guides for the actual knowledge. So training looks really different than what we're used to. Instead of hours and hours of lecturing or just a bunch of shadowing, you know, watching me what I do, I'm going to teach you 10 to 15, maybe 20 minutes about a topic. I'm going to give you foundational knowledge about that topic of our business. And then after that, the 80% of the time is I'm going to just throw scenarios at you, and you're going to use these checklists and decision trees to handle those scenarios. Because what we do, the mistake we make in training is they're learning and we keep answering their questions. So we're training them to come to us when they don't know what to do. What we want to do is train them to be independent and confident working independently. So almost all our time is going to be spent just practicing using those digital guides. Throw them a scenario, throw another different variation, throw all the different variations you can at them, and they're going to gain confidence in using those guides.
Yes, so I guess that takes into account the different learning styles that people would engage with as well. Some people need the theory, some people need the practical. It'd serve all needs, wouldn't it?
Well, it serves all needs, but also at the end of the day, everybody needs to be able to perform the task in their job, and they're not going to be able to memorize all of it. So if we, in part of the training, are training them to use those guides or use that checklist like on the airplane, we're training them to behave the way that we want them to on the job, instead of training them to try to work from memory and come to us when they need help. All the times I'll speak with business owners that say, I know I told them this, but they keep asking me the question over and over again. I'm like, well, you keep answering it. You've trained them to ask you a question when they don't know what to do versus rely on these digital guides. Let them practice and gain confidence there.
Okay, great. Well, that actually rounds us out to, it's a great segue as you finished off that point to your tip number five. Hit us up with that one.
Never answer how do I without pointing to a reference, either a knowledge base article, a digital guide, checklist, or decision tree. When you answer that question, you think you're being helpful, but you're actually creating dependency. And when you point to that digital guide, what you're doing is you're putting the burden on you to have created that resource for them. And you're empowering them so they can say, hey, I couldn't find this. You said it was there, I couldn't find it. Well, now I've got to improve that, right? Or I couldn't follow this. Well, I need to improve it so you can follow it. And when you do that, it totally changes the way that your organization runs. We just had a new head of customer operations come on, and he's built out whole processes for 5 different companies. On the day one, he's like, okay, so how do I handle this situation? And we said, you go find it, figure it out. He said he'd never had somebody tell him that before, you know, in the role. And he said, but it was there and it was awesome. He said, in 2 days, I totally took over customer support for a very complex product. But it's because when he came to us, we didn't say, okay, let me show you how to do all these things that you're going to forget tomorrow. It's go find it on your own and trust that you can follow those guides.
So it's really about organic learning, but also structural and procedural learning all at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah. It's empowering. It's accepting the limitations of our minds that we cannot memorize these mountains of procedures that we have. We can't expect someone to memorize all that and to adapt to all the change. So it's accepting that and accounting for it and then empowering people to perform at their best, even with the natural limitations we have.
Fantastic. Greg, it's interesting. Lindsay started out commenting on your hairstyle and Lindsay's own hairstyle, and yet the five training new employees without pulling your hair out. So I still have a little bit of hair left. So maybe I'm just, a slightly ahead of that game right now.
I've only got these tips because I pulled all my hair out already. So I've done hard work for you.
Yeah,
it's after 20 years of doing this. So
20 years of research.
Yeah, and I was hoping that was your answer, but I wasn't going to, particularly ask you that. Greg, if our listeners want to get hold of you, find out more, find out about your company called ScreenSteps and your software platform and your onboarding platforms, what's the best way to get hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Greg DeVore on LinkedIn. The book, Find and Follow, you can find at findandfollowbook.com, or you can check out screensteps.com. Happy to, you know, reach out to me. I'm happy to help out anyway.
Cool. We'll put that in our show notes as well for our listeners, if so they can track you down and get a copy of that book if they wish. Greg, it's been an absolute pleasure to host you on the show today. Thanks for coming and thanks for sharing your wisdom. And this is Lindsay Adams from Brisbane, Australia, signing off for another edition of the Top 5 podcast with my able-bodied assistant, Rail Bricker, who's based in Perth, Western Australia. Thanks for joining us.